Steve, always good chatting with you, and I only wish I was chatting with you from La Jolla, California. Unfortunately, yeah. I'm in Pittsburgh, but I'm getting ready to do my show tonight. But I am going to go live out to La Jolla and talk to some people out there about the first round of the U.S. Open.
Yeah, it's interesting. This is one of those courses. I'll go back a few years ago when Phil Mickelson beat Paul Casey at the AT&T at Pebble Beach, and the U.S. Open was going to be held at Pebble Beach that year. Someone asked him in the presser, you know, does this help prepare you for the U.S. Open? He says, the course is going to be, he says, you know, it's going to be unrecognizable by the time we play it again. All right. They play the Farmers here all the time. Is that about the same story, the Farmers of Torrey Pines then to today? How unrecognizable is Torrey Pines compared to the Farmers?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's as disparate as it is at Pebble, because when they play at Pebble, you know, they play the Pro-Am, so they don't make the course setup too difficult, because the amateurs would be out there all day. You know,
yes.
I mean, even for a regular tour event. So they cut the rough down even more so. So when they get to Pebble for the U.S. Open, it is drastically different. The rough is thicker here. The fairways are a little bit more narrow. But the last couple years in getting ready for the U.S. Open, they've toughened Torrey Pines. You know, the guys haven't really been eating it up when they play in the Farmers, which used to be the old Buick Open, I believe it was. So it's different. There's no question. And to think that because you won on it before means you can again, you know, it just because you did doesn't mean that's the case. It has to give you some amount of familiarity and some good vibes. But the golf course is different. And, you know, obviously Patrick Reed won there in February. The last guy to win a PGA Tour event and major on the same course in the same year was, ironically, Tiger Woods in 2008, right there at Torrey Pines.
Exactly. From Mike Davis, this is the last go-around.
Right.
What has his impact been on the sport, but also what has his impact been in terms of course setup at open courses?
Yeah, he. You know, I'm a big Mike Davis fan. I like him personally. You know, he's been a frequent guest on the show, and he's a great guy, and he's done, to me, he somewhat brought the USGA into the 21st century when they seemed to be stuck in the 18th century.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be Mike Davis's greatest accomplishment. He also was the guy who made the U.S. Open course setups more fair. They're difficult, but you don't hear guys complaining and grumbling like you did before. And so when Mike came along and took care of that, all of a sudden the players applauded what he did and in terms of the setup. And so that is probably the thing that he will be most remembered for in terms of, you know, his legacy with the USGA. But he was very progressive. And much like Billy Payne at Augusta National, you know, bringing the Masters you know, into the 21st century with digital and everything else and with the telecast, Mike Davis, greatly responsible for doing the same thing for the USGA. I put him on the same par with Billy Payne's impact at the Masters.
When we talked about the Masters when you were with us back in April, it is the one course, because they don't laser it, that there's no green book for. Rory McIlroy was asked about it earlier this week about using green books. And he says, look, I use it. He says, but he'd like to see them go away from it. What is your opinion on the pros using green books?
Steve, I have railed against this for a while. I think they should have been banned. To me, they are more responsible for slowing up play. And if you would eliminate them, you know, they let the players use the range finders at the PGA in an attempt to improve the pace of play. And most of the players said it won't improve the pace because it's not going to slow it down, but they're still going to rely on their regular yardage. But where you see time being wasted is on the putting greens and just studying those green books, and oftentimes getting confused by you know, what they are looking at. You know, Jordan Spieth has been against them for a while as well. And, you know, Jordan Spieth one of his greatest qualities is his ability to read greens. Now, does he use the green book? Yeah, for supplemental information. But to me, it takes that skill, and it is a skill, reading greens, out of the game when you have the green books. And so to eliminate them puts some skill back in the game, and to me, it'll put some speed back in the pace of play. I've never been a big fan of them, and I'm glad to see that they're going to eventually ban them.
Yeah, look, I'm all for any information you can get when you're preparing for something. I'm all for it. But to me, we can't take the instinct or the feel for whatever sport it is out of it, because I think that's part of what makes sports great. How do you feel about that?
I couldn't agree with you more, Steve. And you know, John Daly, but you know, his agent is a friend of mine. He's a Pittsburgh guy, and he would always tell me that anything inside 150, John Daly would always say it's a feel shot. You know, but that is part of the game. It's the feel. It's the instinct. I mean, you can go, you can use the numbers all you want, but when, you know, and it does help you, give you information in terms of club fitting and how far a ball is going to fly. But still, when you get out on a golf course, it's all about feel and instinct, just as it is in most sports. The great players all play with feel and instinct. There's no doubt about it. You know, football, whichever sport you want to choose. So I agree with you, and I think you know, so much of the skill, because of equipment and technology, has been taken out of the sport of golf. And so, to me, bringing back an element that is pure and, you know, relies on some measure of skill, I'm all for it. So I applaud it 100%, and I can't wait to see. Can't wait till they do away with it, to be honest.
Right now, on the board, a guy like Matthew Wolf, you know, Fitzpatrick, they're there, but Brooks Koepka's also there. And
right.
Let's not forget that at the PGA, he was the runner-up, which means he played well enough to be in that position. He put himself in a position where the other guy just beat him. Why does Koepka seem to thrive on tougher assignments?
Steve, let me back up one second and say one more thing about the green books, because
well,
I
please,
wanted to make
please.
This point earlier when we were talking
please.
About information. What blows my mind on the PGA Tour, with all the information they have, with their ability, allegedly, to read greens, with a caddy whose ability typically they hope can read greens, and with a greens book to tell them the breaks and the angles and the, you know, the whether uphill, downhill, whatever the case may be, the angle of descent, how badly PGA Tour players miss putts. I mean, it blows my mind how many times I see putts not even have a chance, and yet they're looking at these greens book. And so to me, that's where they get confused. Now, as for Koepka, you know, there's something internally with this guy. He knows it. He admits it. You know, it's just a little different when he gets to a major championship. And when he gets on that leaderboard early, Steve, look out. He doesn't let go. And when he's, I think that when the rest of the field sees him there in the first round, at or near the top, I bet, you know, all of them, it's, you know, there's a Tiger-like feeling then, like, Rutrow, when he's there, he ain't backing down. And, you know, he's played well at the PGA. He's been playing well. He's first and second in his last three U.S. Opens. You know, he's a U.S. Open player. And that rough, you know, he's so strong. He, DeChambeau, hey, a lot of these tour guys get through this rough like you can't believe. But especially a guy like Koepka, especially a guy like DeChambeau. That rough's not going to bother him. Oh, he may get a real nasty one. But all in all, it's not going to affect him. And that's why even like DeChambeau's, you know, his game plan is he's still just going to bomb it. And because if the rough's going to be there, well, he'd rather come out of the rough with a wedge than a 7 or 6 iron, if the case may be. So, and Koepka is basically the same, although I think Koepka is a more accurate driver of the ball than DeChambeau. So, it's hard to explain why. He can't fully explain it, but he knows there's just something different when he gets when he goes from a regular tour event to a major.
Part of anchor putting, when it was in allowed to happen was it really took away the yips in terms of, like, you know, the hand, it steadied you a little bit. But now they've got this way of doing it, and DeChambeau's one of them, where they've got it, like, tucked in there in such a way. Is that something they need to take a look at?
Well, you know, Steve, there are some of the guys on tour, you know, quietly talk about that. And, you know, some of the analysts talk about that as well, including Paul Azinger and Brandel Chamblee. Brandel Chamblee was on the show with me last week, actually. And you know, that putter is you know, quote, anchored against their left arm and almost tucked in with the elbow. So, you know, you start getting a little nitpicky with some of that. I don't know. I mean, but to me, when you see the guys, even like Bernhard Langer and the guys on the Champions Tour putting with the, you know, the same type of motion almost with the anchor putter, with the anchored putter, you know, up against their chest, and they hold it, you know, they hold their hand away from the sternum. I mean, you know darn well those guys, and they grumble about the guys on the Champions Tour still think that that's an illegal move, and it's something has to be done about it. I'm not as appalled by what Kuchar does and what DeChambeau does, but I get their point. You know, if you're going to ban anchor, then ban anchor. And if you consider that being anchored, okay. But, you know, I don't know that they'll do something about it, but we shall see.
I have to ask you a quick Steelers question. Matt Canada, after 5 months, finally had an opportunity to talk with the media.
Right.
And basically said, hey, look, you know, it's kind of like whatever Ben likes or whatever fits Ben. That's one of the directions he wants to go in with that. What did you think of his first press conference?
I think people overreacted to what he said. I mean, I think they thought, oh, though Ben's just going to do whatever he wants and he's out of control. No. You know, Ben Roethlisberger is an 18-year veteran who's been to 3 Super Bowls. Of course he is going to control that offense. Of course he is going to call the plays, and of course he is going to audible. But, you know, Steve, Ben's no dummy. He wants to win, and if he can run the ball, he's going to run the ball. When he threw it so many times last year, even though they were winning, it's because he knows they couldn't run the ball. But now if he's able to run the ball, do you think Ben wants to throw it 35, 45 times a game? These people who think, oh, he wants to pad his stats?
No.
That's the furthest thing from the truth. And so, you know, will he be in charge of the offense? Yeah. Is Matt Canada, you know, is he going to script some plays that he likes? Yeah, but he's not going to script plays that maybe Ben isn't comfortable with. No offensive coordinator does that with a veteran quarterback. And, you know, Matt Canada, I think in addition to saying all the right things, I think he knows, you know, he's a first-year coordinator in the NFL, and he's only been in the NFL 1 year. And Ben has had success for 18 years in the NFL. So he's not going to sit there and tell Ben Roethlisberger what to do. And when you talk about feel and instinct, Steve, that's the way Ben Roethlisberger plays. And so they're not going to take that away from him by telling him, look, you're going to do this, and you're going to get under center, and you're going to hand the ball off, and you're going to be a robot. No, they want that. They just might as well put Mason Rudolph in there. But so, I mean, yeah, it's Ben's team. It's Ben's offense, and they're going to, you know, is he just going to sit there and throw it like he did last year? No, because they will run the ball, and he knows that, and he was told that. He's comfortable with that. He has no issues with that whatsoever.
The bottom line is we talked about feel and instinct. Part of being a really good coach and feel of instinct is that you know what your quarterback does well and doesn't do well, and you also have a good feel for the personnel around him, and you take advantage of it. That's part of being a coordinator.
That's part of being, you know, a quarterback who knows his personnel and the coach who knows he knows it. And you're 100% right. Matt Cannon is not going to come in and say, we're doing this. But the biggest thing that you might not be noticeable to the naked eye, but I see it right away, is the change in their blocking schemes up front. And that's going to be a big key. But in terms of what Ben has to do beyond handing it off, in terms of throwing it, the route trees and everything else, you know, there's going to be pre-snap shifts in motion. But in terms of what he needs to do throwing the ball, that's not going to change. They're not going to take away what he does best. He's their star. He's the reason why they pay him $100 million. He's the focal point of that team. He's their best player. They want him doing what he does best. But now you give him the opportunity to run the ball with Najee Harris, change what you do up front, change your scheme, change your technique. All of a sudden now it should make that offense even better, and it should make Ben Roethlisberger even more efficient.
My friend, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it. Have a great show tonight, by the way.
Steve, thanks, and it's always good catching up with you, my friend.